Being involved in elite sport takes commitment, perseverance and skill. With a greater expectation of athletes to perform at exceptional levels, the demand on match officials and referees has never been greater. The View from the Middle podcast series is aimed at telling the stories of those people who have undertaken this unique and demanding task. This series enables an insight into what life is like for a match official in the elite national and international sporting arenas. So welcome to the View from the Middle podcast. Here's your host, Grant Atkins.
After 33 games for the Queensland Reds, 45 games for the London Wasps, and 51 games for Racing Metro in France, Nick Berry retired from professional rugby union due to concussion reasons. Following his retirement, Nick joined the refereeing ranks. He joins the View from the Middle podcast today from his home in Brisbane to discuss his experiences with match officiating. So welcome to the View from the Middle podcast, Nick. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, mate.
So you obviously started off as a rugby player. You spent a few seasons with the Queensland Reds, the London Wasps, and obviously a bit of time in France. What actually got you into refereeing?
It was a funny story. It was something that I hadn't really considered, you know, whilst I was a professional player. As you mentioned, I'd sort of spent some time in France for a number of years and then finished up over in London playing the Premiership. Once I retired, we moved home with two young kids, and it wasn't until sort of... Andrew Cole and Scott Young from the Referees Association sort of approached me, and I guess sort of planted a seed about picking up officiating. But in all honesty, like I said, it wasn't something I'd considered whilst I was playing.
What are the changes you've found in terms of your physical approach compared from when you played to officiating?
I guess for starters, you don't have to deal with the injuries, which is a great thing. I think as a player, a lot of those sort of soft tissue injuries that you sort of block your training from day to day just don't exist as a match official. There's a lot more running than I had envisioned. As a player, I kind of didn't consider how much work actually went into the physical preparation of match officials whilst I was playing. But turning it up and seeing what the guys do, from session to session, I got a real appreciation for how hard they work. So I guess when you sort of take away that contact element to the training from week to week, and also the skill stuff, your specialist skills that you'll do, and also that game as a team, that gameplay stuff, it's just a lot of cardiovascular fitness, and obviously we do sort of a lot of mental preparation and stuff like that as well.
What were some of the biggest challenges you found in terms of understanding the laws of the game that you probably compared to when you played as an official now?
I'll stick my hand in the air and say that I honestly didn't know as much as I thought I knew as a player. You're always quick to sort of point out where someone's wrong or where you think they're wrong as a player. But there's still laws that I'm learning now that I didn't know existed. So I have no doubt that if I knew what I know now as a player, I would have been a better player. Because the game of rugby is quite complicated. There are a lot of laws. So, I guess as a match official, you need to know them intimately.
In relation to your communication on the field, I read in an article that you found one of the challenges being having to implement formal communication as an official rather than your casual communications, which you're probably used to as a player.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, that's one of my sort of work-ons at this point in time, I guess. As an ex-professional, you feel very comfortable out there with the players, and not that you seek that engagement with them, but I mean you certainly welcome it. And I guess at times you know, there are points where that empathy that you have with the players and that sort of casual nature is a positive. Other times where you sort of need to really come across, I guess, for more formal and professional than I guess that that you would as a player.
Hmm. Do you find that any of the players have ever referenced back to you about being a player, ex-player?
Oh, yeah, look, there's still a lot of players that I've played with that are currently playing. Mm. And I guess it only takes one in each change room to know that, you know, you're a player for the rest of them to know. I don't think that sort of gives you any sort of longer leash than they would any other official. But I guess, you know, to one extent, you know, that's the knowledge that maybe I've been there as a player and I, you know, I like to think that I understand the game quite well, that they can sort of, you know, see that in how I go about officiating a game.
Hmm. How have you gone in relation to coping with when you're a player? Obviously, you go through wins and losses together. How have you found dealing with the unique feeling of officiating, where you walk off a field and you kind of have that feeling where you don't have either of those experiences?
Yeah, look, that's a great question, because it's something that I don't think you can prepare for. Like, I mean, as an official, you sort of go out there with the mentality that you kind of want to be a ghost. You know, you want to be able to set some standards around the game where both teams have the opportunity to play and that the better team will win. You go out there and it's you're not emotionally attached to the result to some extent. So the good games are generally the ones where you come off and no one's really talking about your performance. Not that that's what you did as a player, but I guess it's as a player you had someone to share those really good games with. As an official, you come off and it's at times it can be quite a lonely place where, you know, if you haven't had the game that you wanted to, there's no one there to sort of pat you on the back or just say, hey, look, mate, you know, we got next week or anything like that. It's more sort of a self-reflection process that you work with your coach and maybe some of your closer peers as to what went wrong and how you're going to fix it.
Have you found that an important part of your development as an official, networking with other officials that have been there for a while?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, like, just as you would as a player, as a match official, you pick up gems from a lot of different people. You know, I think, you know, when we head to our national camp or our Sanzar camp, I have no doubt that, you know, that everybody in that room does at least one thing better than I can do it. So it's about sort of tapping into what that one thing is and how I can sort of start implementing it into what I do.
Hmm. How do you cope with the adversity of making an error? Or off air, we spoke about the challenges of having a howler. But how do you cope with those? Obviously, as a player, you make mistakes and you have techniques to move on and continue with your performance. How do you do that as a match official?
Look, I think, you know, my experience, you know, sort of having played the game professionally for 10 years, you kind of you don't head out there with this mentality that you are going to be perfect. I think it's impossible. And I mean, as a player, you used to spray passes, you'd miss tackles, you'd drop balls, whatever it was, you make mistakes. And then you just have to move on. You know, you have to move on from what you've done and think about the next job that you're going to do, because you've got 14 other guys sort of relying on you to do that job. So, you know, like I guess that mentality about acknowledging that I was going to make mistakes out there kind of better equipped me for when I actually did make those mistakes. So, I think it's come from that, you know, sort of operating that high performance environment, you know, previously as a player.
Hmm. Do you have any networks with other referees and match officials from different sports?
Yeah, I mean, the Australian Rugby Union put, as I know the NRL do, and a number of other sports, Cricket Australia and Football Australia, I went through on a Australian Sports Commission scholarship, and so we got exposed there to a number of different match officials, and it was incredible to really get a grip on the things that you can pick up from other sports which you thought would have nothing to do with potentially your sport. I did meet a few guys there. One of your boys, actually, Tyson Burrow, from up here, who's a good guy, and we speak regularly, and a couple of the other AFL guys too, which is good. Funnily enough, the one sport that really surprised us, and that I think we all picked up, a lot of the active sort of match officials picked up from, was the work of the cricket umpires and what they do to mentally sort of switch on for long periods of the day, and how they go about processing an error. Because they've got us back on, because the next ball could be another one. So, it was a great program, and I got huge value out of it.
Yeah, there's obviously in the NRL we're often criticised about inconsistencies across games, and obviously we only have 8 games a week. What kind of challenges do you think Super Rugby possesses, particularly with referees from not only Australia but New Zealand, South America and South Africa?
Yeah, look, that's another good question, because, I mean, the game's played all over the world, and just the Super Rugby competition itself is played in 5 different countries. So there's going to be different interpretations about how the laws are going to be implemented. I guess as a Sanzar squad, we have weekly meetings and... formal communication sent out, so we can make sure we can, if anyone's sort of outlying there with any of the laws or how we're interpreting, that we can recalibrate so we can get that consistency across the competition. With rugby, I guess it is always going to be a difficult element of the game, because it is such and subjective sport where there are so many laws and there are so many potential penalties and that. So it's always going to be a struggle to try and get that consistency, let alone here in Australia, not just across 5 different countries.
How does it operate in terms of your training, like your physical training? Do you train with a group of Australian officials?
Yeah. So we have a trainer who sets our programs, basically will look after not just the 4 full-time referees on the Sanzar panel, but he will oversee the national squad as well. So that's the second tier down from Super Rugby. Those guys will be running touch for Super Rugby and refereeing sort of the premier grade level in their respective states. So as a group, we train as only myself and I, myself and Rowan Hoffman, who are full-time based up here in Brisbane. But then we also train with a few other people who are on the national panel. So we'll train with them 3 times a week. And other than that, we'll have to pick up our own training sessions whenever we can fit them into our schedule.
Yeah. With operating and officiating across the 5 countries, do you find any challenges officiating with people from different backgrounds?
Not problems, I think. I think we really make a conscious effort to sort of we're very lucky in the fact that we have the opportunity to be doing it full time. So we generally arrive in the country that we're going to be officiating at least a few days prior to the game itself. So we'll make an effort to sort of go out with a meal, have pre-game meetings, send our pre-game briefs out to those people who are going to be assisting us on the day as well. But the way the Sanzar works is we're teamed up in pods of 2. So you'll always be travelling with someone from your home nation generally, and you'll work with them consistently throughout the year, and then you'll pick up one other touch judge and the TMO from the respective country that you've got the game in.
And what's the process for assessment or even in self-assessment of officials in Super Rugby?
Yeah, so we'll conduct our own personal review after every game, and that's as a referee and also as a touch judge, as an assistant referee we call. And then we will also have our coach, he'll do his review on our game. We each have our own individual coaches, and then on top of that, we have a selection panel from Sanzar who will they'll assess each of the games, and we'll get a formal assessment sent out generally within 2 or 3 days of the performance.
Yeah. Well, you've obviously played in the Northern Hemisphere for a significant amount of time. Looking back now, do you see much difference in officiating from being an official in the Southern Hemisphere compared to when you played in the Northern Hemisphere?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the game itself is significantly different, when played in the Northern Hemisphere as opposed to the Southern Hemisphere, and specifically Super Rugby as well. I think, the match officials up there, they might be stronger in some areas and maybe not as exposed in other areas, and vice versa to us down here. And I think it really just comes down to is the length of the seasons over there, the conditions they play in, the number of games and that, because the Super Rugby down here is quite a free flowing open game, which is quite quick. So generally, a big strength for a match official down here is understanding when to sort of let it go and when to pull things up. Up there in the Northern Hemisphere and in potentially sort of wet conditions with a lot of games, the game can be generally slower, but those guys are very good at their set piece officiating. So
yeah,
there'll be strengths and weaknesses across the board, but certainly the game is played differently depending on which hemisphere you're in.
Did you ever have an us versus them mentality when you played, in terms of you as a player versus the referees?
I'd love to say no, but yeah, I think there is, and I'd like to think that that's been broken down a little bit over these sort of last 10 years in particular. Some of the best referees that I can remember were the ones who they probably weren't even the best there, but the best for me and as a player were the guys who I felt were the most approachable. Because at the end of the day, in such a subjective game, they're always going to see things a little bit differently to what you see. And you're always, obviously, you've got emotion involved in it and you're invested in the game, so you're generally only looking through one eye as a player. So it's very hard for the referee to please everyone. So I think there was a little bit of that us versus them. But I think that stereotype has been broken down now. I know that the players up here, and I know a lot of my mates who are still playing, they've been surprised of how much actually goes into it, how much training we do, the preparation that goes into it, the review process, I think is significantly more than I used to do as a player, and how accountable you are actually held as a referee. And so I think that is starting to break down. I guess the more ex-players that's starting to come across as well, it's only going to sort of help that stereotype get broken down as well.
Are you involved in any of the recruitment and retention of any junior referees?
It's actually just started this year. This is my first year as a full-time official, so I'm starting to sort of do those things where new referees who are coming into it, particularly referees who have played the game and maybe lack the experience in the same areas that I did and still currently do. So, but then vice versa, they'll have me work with sort of referees who have come through that more traditional pathway as well, because generally my strengths will be their weaknesses and vice versa, their strengths will be my weaknesses, so we sort of bounce well off each other.
Just in relation to movement around the field, obviously you played halfback when you played. How much difference have you found in where you would actually move on a field as a match official compared to when you played?
I think as a nine, it was I was lucky in the fact that there's not too much difference as to my workload as a player and my workload as a match official. As a nine, you had to be at every breakdown to clear the ball or to make decisions. As an official, you have to be at every breakdown to make sure everyone's doing everything right. So I guess in terms of positional play, early on in particular, I used to get a little bit too close to the breakdown, if that makes sense, because that's where I feel natural. So it's taken some time just to sort of get that right balance about sort of being on the spot to be able to see everything happen, but also not getting too close where I lose that peripheral vision and maybe miss something out a little bit wider.
Hmm. With the TMO, so in terms of the technology that's involved in decision-making rugby union, what are your opinions on that as an on-field referee?
I think the TMO is an asset in the fact that it assists everyone, the on-field team, to get the right decision. I think at the end of the day, that's what people want. That's what players want. That's what coaches want. That's what fans want. They want the correct decision. And then the frustration lies sometimes in the amount of time that might take, or potentially the amount of times that it's been used throughout a game. But I know it's continually changing. It's evolved this year. Having only been on the Sanzar panel for 2 years, they had changes to the TMO last year, and they've since changed them this year to, I guess, put more accountability on the on-field team of three to make those decisions. So basically TMO this year for us is only can sort of impact on foul play decisions if there's an act of foul play that we want to review, or in the instance of scoring a try, you know, whether it be a foot in touch or a grounding. But that being said, we have to make an on-field decision similar to NRL now. But the TMO has to find compelling evidence to overturn our decision.
Yeah. Do you think much of the networks that happen in Super Rugby and in the TMO, do they look at other technologies and other sports and how they implement their technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, we're hoping to have some of the technology that you guys have available at the moment, where you can have our TMOs have access to the split screens and the ability to sort of pick which angle they want to view. I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that currently our TMOs basically only have access to the footage that you're seeing at home. Yeah. So the replays that you're watching at home is the replay that the TMO is seeing. He doesn't have the ability to change angles or cut to a particular time. He's at the mercy of the director, which obviously sometimes in foreign countries can be a difficult process. If that director doesn't speak, his English might be his second language and things like that. So it can be quite frustrating for them. I think it's a really tough job in what they do. I think within the next few rounds of Super Rugby, they'll start trialling the same technology that you guys have available, where he's got his own screen, he can choose from six different angles, he can speed things up, slow things down, rewind, pause it, and that'll only improve the process, I'm sure.
Hmm. What are some of the great places you've been since officiating?
So fortunate, you know, rugby's taken me to some great places throughout my career. I guess as a match official, as a referee, servicing the Super Rugby, I've been to South Africa, New Zealand quite frequently. I also went to Hong Kong to do my first Test match last year. Later next month, I'm off to Tbilisi in Georgia for 4 weeks to do the World Junior Championship, which is a place that I probably would never have gone if rugby wasn't such a big part of my life.
Hmm.
You travel everywhere as well, so very fortunate.
Yeah. What's the difference between a guy like you in Super Rugby and someone in, say, the sevens circuit?
I think there used to be a bit of a crossover between not just the players who are playing sevens and then 15s, but match officials as well.
Yeah.
I think it's becoming a lot more specific, and earlier on in your career they'll make a decision as to whether you're going to go down the sevens route or the 15s route. You may not necessarily stay there for the duration of your career, but I guess, depending on what your development requires, they might send you on that seven circuit. And so I guess with that, those guys get to see some beautiful places. They do a lot of travel. And the game itself lends it to I guess developing areas of just basically decision making, because within the game of sevens everything is just done so fast. There's no real no real time to set up that player rapport or anything like that. It's you know, 7 minutes, you stop for a breather and going out for 7 minutes, game's over. So generally players won't want to sort of question your decisions or anything like that. The game itself is just so quick. You make a decision, they move back, you go on, and everything's done sort of as a post-mortem. Whereas in a game of 15s, you know, you've got 80 minutes there where you can basically break it down into four different segments where you're trying to just set your standards around the breakdown and set piece in the first 20 minutes. And then, you know, sort of trying to be consistent as possible throughout the duration of those following 60 minutes. So completely different skills, I think. Obviously, there's some crossover between the two, but those guys train differently to us as well physically. They do a lot more speed stuff, whereas, you know, we'll do a lot, you know, a lot more sort of, I guess, cardio, speed, endurance, that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your time. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and all the best for the remainder of the Super Rugby season.
Appreciate that, Graham. My pleasure.